Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today is Thursday, September 10th, the year of our Lord 2025 or 26. This is Coffee with JC Sherbert. My buddy Keith's listening. I apologize, Keith. For the first week of this year, I said 2025, and I can't believe it's September 10th. And I just did it again. Oh, well, Keith called me on it. He's like, hey, look, man, you got to say the right year. People are going to think you're nuts. And I was like, okay. So anyway, a little shorter episode today of Coffee. Thursdays get backed up a little bit around here, but I did want to touch on the Gamecock offense as we kind of talked about defense yesterday. And then tomorrow, final thoughts as Towson comes in Saturday night, 7 o'clock kickoff. Good game for the fans, students. Get in there at night. I'm sure the conditions will be much better. By the way, on thebigspur.com, our man Will Gunner, Wild Bill, has his weekly column up, and he kind of talks about those kickoff times early. I've never thought they made sense for the South. I mean, even I think Florida had an opener at noon a couple of years ago. I was like, my God, why? Why are you doing that to those people? Gainesville, Florida gets really hot, and in Athens, Knoxville, Columbia, Tuscaloosa. It just doesn't make much sense to keep doing it, especially if you're gonna. I don't know. TV runs the world as far as college football goes these days. But as Gunnar pointed out in his column, and I'll let you go read it if you're a member. We delay games for lightning now, storms, hurricane threats. We move kickoff. I mean, it's very flexible, especially with streaming these days. There needs to be something done. It's not safe for players, fans, the band. And then they're moving kickoff back into late August next year. So, and with the way the college football playoff is selected, and maybe if they go to 24 as expected, it's going to change this again. But with the way that group up the old BCS group, I mean, losses are certainly weighed more heavily than our losses in general are weighed more heavily than quality wins, things like that. So anyway, it's a discussion for another time. I'm going to dive right into the offense. Speaking of offense, Perry Orth is on the morning show today. We'll have the Fab Five Challenge. You can download the Chief Sports app for free and enter that and win some valuable gift cards. That's on for Android. It's on Google Play, and it's on the App Store for Apple. Also, Matt Smith is in to talk with JB in the first hour, then Mad Dog and Alba, the Thirsty Thursday final hour. So that's all the housekeeping here on Coffee for today around Chief Sports Network and thebigspur.com, all the stuff that we do. So Carolina had a very efficient day on offense. They're number one in the country in third down conversions, I think 7 for 8. I'm sorry, number one in the SEC, third down offense, maybe in the country, 7 for 8, third down. That's the money down. That's the down Carolina struggled on. That's the down that in this offense, as fast as it goes at times, they didn't use the big tempo a lot on Saturday, but they did use it some. If you're not converting on third down, you can put your defense in some problems, no matter how deep they are. Most defensive coaches will tell you that that's the drawback to running tempo on offense is that it wears down the defense. Everything's give and take in life, right? I'll take the points at this point, but you sort of look at it, and if you're misfiring on that down and having to punt a lot, it can cause you some problems. And then the standard answer at Carolina. Is always, and it's always been, be good on first and second down. You don't have to worry about it. And players, coaches, Beamer, everybody said, well, we don't want to get to third down. I don't blame you. That's a very, very wise, I guess, approach to playing offense, right? And Carolina did that for the most part. Eight attempts on third down is not that much. And so, good job there. Of course, we've talked about the yardage. We've talked about Sellers and his completion percentage and all that good stuff. But the first thing I want to point out is execution by Lenora Sellers. In this offense, and Kendall Briles did say yesterday, 75% of the play calls were in his estimation, were RPOs, run pass options, which he calls mixed plays, which means in real time, the quarterback has to read the defense and make a decision. It's like triple option football. It's the O in the RPO option. It's like triple option football. So your quarterback, and we've taught that ad nauseum all summer, and I've tried to bring it up, gosh, I guess the last 30 days, just because it kind of hit me. I was like, well, we've maybe talked about how easy the offense is to learn and all that too much. It still comes down to decision making by the quarterback, and I think that's part of the genius behind having simple play calls, all that. You can run it fast, is that you can rep it over and over and over, and the quarterback, it kind of becomes second nature, muscle memory, all that. As far as where you want to go with the football, if you want to give it, if you want to pull it and run it, if you want to throw it, and yes, there is a pull it and run it part to it, for Lenore Sellers, but there are plenty of guys wide open, and he made some really good decisions, and made some excellent throws. You know, one of those throws to DJ Black on the sideline, man, that's a big time throw. Play over the middle. Todd Ellis called it the prettiest play Lenore's has done, where he hit Donovan Murph right before the touchdown for the first down. All good throws by Lenore Sellers. He's got an arm. He's got arm talent. I think that there were probably some plays that when he looks at the film, when Kendall Briles looks at the film, he'd like to have back, you know. And there were a couple that some of the folks that break down film online have pointed out. And, you know, you probably got I mean, they've all got good points there looking at the all 22 and all that. So there's always stuff to work on. And I think you want that in an opening game, especially offensively. You don't want to peak, like I said yesterday, in the first game. So that can get better. And, you know, the other part of it is the Kent secondary probably, I mean, that was kind of their weakness coming in, you know, in against better competition, maybe not this weekend. There's going to be some guys that can run faster, that can close better, that can get out of jams, and those guys will be a little bit more contested. And so Lenore Sellers, the key is that when the competition speeds up, he still trusts it and trusts to fire it in there. The receivers catch it, all that good stuff. There won't be as many guys wide open. That said, with this system, it's sort of designed that way. No matter how good or talented a defense is, if you put them in conflict and they're out of position and they're not where the ball is going, there's going to be space to attack. And so it's very, very important that Lenore Sellers continues to execute the offense at a high level and makes great decisions in real time. That's kind of one of the keys to the whole season, folks, is Sellers' decision making. And I have faith he'll be able to do it. I think he did a lot of good on Saturday, but that's a key, and that's sort of an unknown because it's an unknown offense, and they haven't played anybody but Kent State so far. And you know, if you're kind of looking around, because it was such a good opener, going, well, what do we worry about now? As Gunnar put in his column today, he's in search of anxiety. Well, if you want some kind of generated anxiety, I guess, understand that Lenore Sellers has to still execute this offense no matter how easy it is to learn and all that. And it goes beyond play calling because Briles is going to dial it up. You know, this is a, you know, 75% of the time Saturday, RPO. And so that's up to the quarterback to make the right reads. I think Saturday they all did. Anderson, Cutter Woods. The other good part of it is to kind of, and Kendall Briles said this, and it was mentioned on the broadcast, is that, you know, I talk about all the time how great it is. Blowouts are good, you know, and the Steve Spurrier philosophy of, we're going to just run our offense and we'll put our backups in, but we're going to still run our offense. Well, South Carolina did that. You know, in case you're wondering why they're throwing, well, the defense is playing to stop the run. And so they throw. The defense is playing to stop the pass. They're going to run. And they just do it over and over again. Indiana, same thing last year. If you're kind of wondering why some of their scores got out of hand, and they did against good teams. Oregon and Illinois can tell you about that. They just kept running their offense. And I think that's good. I think it's a good philosophy Because your backups work hard and they don't get in the game sometimes when you're playing a big opponent, and you need to reward them. You don't just go in there and run it up the middle. And Kendall Briles talked about that yesterday. As far as the RPO game goes, I think that's at South Carolina. And this is another reason why I like this offense for the Gamecocks and for a lot of other teams in the SEC, is that it is sort of an equalizer. I mean, you may have a great defense you're facing. Your offensive line may have some not issue may have some issues blocking some of the defensive lines. But with the way this thing's set up, you're just countering what they do constantly. And so I think that's smart, and I can't sit there, and I'm not smart enough, and I don't know a lot of people are, to diagnose every single play as an RPO or not. So I was glad to hear Browse say that, because my assumption was that it was. I don't think that they're just dialing up passes in the fourth quarter to run it up against Kent State with their backup quarterback. But I think it can be an equalizer if executed properly. And then when you have talent, you got speed, you got guys that can play, those passes that Lenoris can hit wide open, or the runs that break out against a lighter box, they can turn into bigger gains, explosive plays, et cetera, et cetera. I thought the run game, there's been some talk, and you look at the stats, 2 carries for 1 yard for Lenoris Sellers, about running him. And I think that's 2025 anxiety coming in to play. I think everybody knows Lenoris Sellers can run. I think everybody knows he's a weapon. I also think on Saturday they absolutely did not need him to run the ball. They probably needed their running backs to get lathered up a little more. And then why risk it? You know what I'm saying? Like, you want him, he gets in the open field, he gets in a pile, he twists his ankle. All of a sudden, you're going with your backup quarterback from Mississippi State. It just, to me, why run him if you don't have to? And they didn't. Now, that said, I would be shocked if that's not part of the plan to win. Maybe not Saturday night, but moving forward with those last 10 games, there's not going to be, you look at the history of Browse and his offense, there's not going to be a hesitancy to run him. And there's not. It's just, shoot, 19 for 23 passing. The running backs went for 286 yards. The simple, it didn't look like simple basic plays, did it? But the base plays were working and they were executing at a high level. So why run him? Plus, he didn't really face a lot of pressure, where he had to make the Houdini plays. He had one where he got out of the pocket and had a really nice pass to Black, another nice pass to DJ Black, wide open. I think that was Black's 33-yard gain, where he just rolled out and fired it down there, and which is what you want to see out of him. And I don't remember him facing a whole lot of pressure at all. So, all in all, I wouldn't worry too much about the fact he's not out there with designed runs. And honestly, if you're executing and putting points on the board Saturday night, I wouldn't run him again. And I know some people want to see it and all that. And trust me, I think you'll get plenty of opportunity, but why do it? I mean, just, you never know when a quarterback starts running and there's piles in football and things like that, even against lower level opponents, and he gets hung up in there and twisted. Like I said, man, just don't. I mean, it could happen on a sack or something, but if you're protecting, and I mean, why physically get your quarterback tackled? Because getting tackled downfield, same thing as a sack, And when quarterbacks take a bunch of sacks, they don't feel too good. And you want Lenoris ready to go for the 10-game gauntlet of 10 straight Power Four opponents coming up after Towson. Offensive line, I think what was very impressive about it was that they rolled a bunch of people in and out, not a lot of drop-off. I thought the communication was very elite up front. You know, there's a lot of questions as to what they're going to do when Pete comes back. And, you know, I think right now there's a lot of options on the table for it. I think largely it depends on how Jacarius Peake practices. My understanding is he, Brow said yesterday he practiced, had no pain, wasn't even sore. So he's an elite player. And so you got to find a home for Darius Gray. What do you do with Shed Surratt? You know, Nolan Hay played really, really well. Carter Miller played well. Communication was very good from the center position. Poku was good. So they may end up just playing 6 or 7 or 8 in games. I don't know. I mean, in non-lower level games, I do expect them to rotate a bit on Saturday night. But that was, you know, most coaches will tell you that they like to have five and stick with five because of continuity. But the guys that did not start were very good about coming in and making it seamless on Saturday. And I think that's a good sign. If you remember the dumpster fire offensive lines around here, there's so much communication issue type things that happened and penalties and stuff like that. I mean, just having a clean game, you keep hearing that phrase over and over, clean game, was something to build on. I do think that there's going to be games where this offensive line faces a defensive line, just like every other in the SEC, and gets its butt kicked. But we all can live with that, right? What you can't live with is guys blocking air because they don't know what to do, guys running the wrong way, rushers coming free, people not picking pressures up. You know, I think the running backs blocked okay Saturday. You know, there's some maybe they could have done a little better. The tight ends blocked well. Max Drag, I mentioned him on the Insiders Forum this morning. He deserves a shout out. Really good day blocking. When they run what's called the split zone play, the tight ends have blocks. Perimeter blocking left a lot to be desired, quite frankly. Some guys at receiver probably need to be a little more fundamentally sound. Out there, a tight end as well, you know, not Max, but I noticed Mo Brown didn't have a good block one time, but that'll all come. You know, you can't play the, not to quote Mike Shula, but the perfect game's still out there, right? No game is going to be perfect. You can always nitpick, but you know, if there was a blocking concern, if I had to rank them in order after Saturday, you know, things that could really hurt the team if it doesn't clean up. Perimeter would be one, and running backs would probably be two. And I don't think it was universally all the running backs. It was just a couple of moments here and there. I was like, well, you know, the back didn't really pick it up. And that was kind of more early than anything. But overall, an improved blocking offense, that makes a difference. You know, Sellers, the RPO game, run game needs to continue to come on. But, you know, it's not. This offense has not yet arrived. You're always judged by your results, and you know your competition level factors into that. I do think there are some signs that this team will be able to put points on the board frequently against SEC competition, just because of the nature of it and all that. But it all gets back to Sellers executing. And then you remember I just talked about the offensive line getting his butt kicked. When that happens, Sellers still has to go execute, right? He's got to get it out quicker, got to kind of scheme around it, all that kind of thing. And then the lack of penalties was really impressive as well. You know, too many times. Not only does the, I mean, operationally, it's just like night and day different. Across the board on offense, the guys know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. That's important, you know, because. You know, bad offense or overwhelmed offense or an offense that runs up against a great defense, that's going to happen. That happened when Steve Spurrier was here. You know, there wasn't any kind of operational issues or anything. Just the defensive lines they played overwhelmed their offensive lines, couldn't get passes off. Quarterback was off that day, whatever. But you didn't have Matt confusion and all this substitute. I mean, it's just clean. You know what I'm saying? Clean, like they keep saying, clean game. And you're looking for another clean game Saturday night against Towson. All right, man. I got to get moving. Don't forget ITG today. Matt Smith, Perry Orth, the Fab Five Challenge. Also, we have Hour Three with Phil and myself on Thirsty Thursday. And don't forget the preview show tomorrow. Another game week is upon us. It has come quick. And a big weekend around the, it's kind of the Big Ten SEC Challenge this weekend, right? You got Ohio State, Michigan play Texas and Oklahoma, and then the Mississippi State Bulldogs. I know everybody will be tuning into that for the CBS game of the week, Mississippi State at Minnesota. That'll be an interesting game. Minnesota's supposed to be good. They beat the Eastern Illinois Panthers 59-7 in their opener. I think their opener was on Thursday. And then, of course, MSU put up 762 yards of total offense and beating Louisiana Monroe 62-13. Kamario Taylor, their quarterback, very impressive. Gamecocks are going to have to get him on the ground and stop the Mississippi State rushing attack, which is ranked number one, I believe, in the country after week one. I think you put up 762 yards, you're going to be number one in the country. All right, this has been Coffee with JC Sherbert. I'm out. Holla.